Ça.
There we go. Hey, everybody. Thanks for coming. I appreciate it. I'm going to put the audio from this class up on the web for you for free. If you were in my class this morning, you don't have to sign. But otherwise, if someone could start a sheet, and if you want the audio, here, you can use this piece of paper. You don't have to give me your email again, but if you want the audio and you're just in this class, then put your email address on there, and in about a week I'll have it up and you can listen. And then it's just for the people who are in the class. It's not to disseminate. Okay? Yeah, you'll get both of them. Okay? Yeah, power to the people, right? So it's my pleasure to be here. And again, thank you to the state organization. It's a beautiful conference. I've never been here before. I didn't know I was coming to Disney World. I took the kids here a few years ago. It was pretty weird. But I enjoyed the rock and roller coaster, the Aerosmith thing. That was like drugs. That was very cool. Anyway, it's great to be here. We're going to talk about entry-exit points on the different channels. And I may not get through all the entry-exit blocks. I'm just going to keep talking till we get to the end. But I'll give a broad overview and a philosophical overview. Now, I'm always, when I teach, I'm teaching from a spiritual, integral, and evolutionary perspective on the medicine. So, integral, basically, we could have a month-long course on that, but the fundamental notion is that the practitioner's integrity is the foundation of the medicine, and that all knowledge and all techniques serve integrity. So, integral was coined by Sri Aurobindo, the founder of integral yoga, and what he meant was a yoga that left no part of the human being behind. So if we're endeavoring to practice a holistic medicine, to me that implies that we're not leaving any dimension of the patient behind. It's all in the picture. Their ethics, their values, their state and stage development, their level of consciousness, their actions, their beliefs, their behavior, their diet. There's no part of the self that's left out of the picture. And for any one of us, our capacity to address another human being in all of their dimensions is directly dependent on the authentic relationship we have to all the dimensions of our own self. So if we want to know the patient, we will know the patient to the degree we know ourself, and not more, and everything else is abstract. You may be able to answer a question on a test, or you may be able to point to a line in which classic it was in and analyze the character content, but to understand the inside of that, it has to be authentically lived experience. So that's integral. Spirit, to me, spirit has two directions, transcendence and immanence. Spirit is a force pushing toward the true, the good, the beautiful. And it has two directions, all the way down, all the way up. So there's a force, a direction when spirit is liberated in a human being, there's a direction of return to the source. That's the foundation of Taoist and Buddhist medicine, returning to the source of self. That's transcendence, leaving the moment to go back to the source of self, which only ever exists in the moment. And then there's a direction of immanence, which means there's a push, an impulse toward the true, the good, the beautiful, to manifest the human being in the next highest state and stage. To realize one's unrealized yet imminent potential that's just waiting for attention to become manifest. So, and evolutionary, to me, we could have a month-long course on it. In essence, what it means is development without end. So the pre-modern spiritual myths are that there's an end state, that enlightenment means you're done and you can't develop anymore. And I would just say the evolutionary perspective, and again, it's a long conversation, basically recognizes from a very humble perspective, that there's always development without end. So we're talking about a medicine that embraces all the capacities of what it means to be human and catalyzes the emergence of those capacities to transcend, to move to a higher state, and that there's no end in sight, that it's an eternal process. So that's the lecture that I'm teaching from. That's the perspective that I'm always lecturing from. So when we talk about entry-exit blocks, the larger context is block. And the notion of block is just that in any tradition of medicine, we never cut right to the chase, right? We always have to lay a foundation, clear the therapeutic field, put in a basis, so that the higher states that we catalyze can be sustained. It's very easy to induce higher states in human being. For people like us, to induce a higher state, you just have to get a person's attention off themselves for a trillionth of a second. So it's really not hard to catalyze higher state experiences. The myth is that once a person has a higher state experience, they'll be changed. Not necessarily. We all become consumers of experience, right? Just consuming experience. The trick in the practice of medicine is not just to show a person a higher potential future. You can put a needle in and a pain they've had for 8 years can disappear. But that's not the same as healing. A person is sick long before they have symptoms, and they're going to feel better long before there's a foundation of health that can sustain the kind of improvement a needle can create. I was impressed very early on in my practice, when I really barely knew what I was doing, that I did a very simple treatment on a man who was on workman's comp and disability and hadn't been able to work in seven, 8 years. And I gave him one treatment. He came back in a week later, said, "I've gone back to work. I'm telling everybody all his pain." He had neuropathy that the doctors were ascribing to diabetes. His diabetes, all his pain went away for 3 years. Then it came back, and 2 months later, he was dead of cancer. So for me, I'm always much happier when treatment is progressive and when I see signs throughout the pulse and the tongue and the eye and the hara and all the different dimensions I can assess to see slow, steady, and predictable improvement, because then I feel that what's there can be sustained. And if something disappears in a minute, as beautiful that as it is, I've learned it can come back in a minute. So the real thing is not just in inducing euphoria or making pain miraculously disappear. It's practicing a medicine with a short, medium, and long-term view. From my perspective, if we're going to practice holistic medicine, we should be able to practice medicine from the time before a person's incarnated, which is what you're doing if you're practicing fertility, all the way to the moment after a person's death. That's when you're whispering in their ear. So we should be able to meet the person at every state and stage of their development, be able to assess those state and stages. And our medicine is certainly sophisticated enough to do that, but our capacity to be able to do that is very much dependent on our own development and understanding of ourselves as human beings. So when we talk about entry-exit blocks, we're talking about one kind of block that can be an impediment to the progression of treatment that needs to be either cleared up before one cuts to the chase with the deeper medicines. Entry-exit blocks can be constitutional, as we'll see, and they can also occur due to trauma. So they can come up and need to learn to be recognized at the beginning of treatment, to be cleared out of the way before we get to deeper levels. Or they can come up with an injury or trauma at any point during treatment, and we need to know how to recognize them. Because the presence of an entry-exit block means the channel system isn't functional. So if the channel system isn't functional and the organs aren't in communication with each other, then anything else we do is going to be built on a weak foundation. Let's look at the Neijing Suwen, chapter 13. The translations I use are Paul Unschuld. Qibo says, the utmost principle in treatment lies with oneness. Huangdi, what is that to say, the oneness? Qibo, there is oneness and therefore one gets it. That's a very Zen. Moksha, right here, right now, baby. Not at some point in the future. Huangdi says, how? Close the door and shut the windows. Okay? So people have argued with me and have said what they mean is just close the doors and the windows of your clinic. That's not what it means. That's the most materialistic, superficial. The doors and the windows are the sensory orifices, the portals. Seven holes in the head, seven stars in the Big Dipper. The Big Dipper is the central administration of human destiny. It's the source of light in the heaven revolving around the pole star. The pole star is the absolute, GV20, the center of self that is just light exploding out of darkness. It's the portal between something and nothing, the point at which light enters from emptiness into this world as the evolutionary impulse to fuel cosmic evolution. So we have seven holes in the head to perceive the seven sources of light, and there are seven demons, seven pathogens internally and seven pathogens externally that can obscure the perception of light. Okay? So when we talk about closing the doors and shutting the windows, we're talking about letting go of identification with the body, letting go identification with the mind for the sake of perceiving spirit, for the sake of perceiving truth. Close the door and shut the windows, tie yourself to the patient. Repeatedly inquire about his feelings, adapt your treatments to his sentiments. If one gets a hold is to attain, like dachi. Da means to attain. So if one attains the spirit, the patient will prosper. If the spirit is lost, the patient perishes. And Huangdi says, good. So when we talk about entry exit blocks, and I'll elaborate on this, we're talking about opening the sensory orifices and dispelling ignorance. The ignorance of external pathogens that come in to obscure the transmission of light, and the internal pathogens. And the internal pathogens are a deep and morbid infatuation with one's thoughts and emotional states. You know any people like that? You ever meet anyone who was deeply, morbidly infatuated with what they happen to think or feel? Everybody's thinking, yeah, that person looks like me. The person next to me. Everyone enters. Okay. So the Tao Te Ching has another reference. And this is throughout the Taoist canon and many places in the medicine and in the Buddhist and Taoist texts, we have these references to the portals and the doors and the windows and the doors and the sensory orifices and the orifice of the heart. So again, to really understand the medicine, the understanding of the medicine is contextualized by poetry, philosophical texts, fiction. So you have to read, to understand the medicine, you can't just read Chinese medicine. You have to look at the art and read the literature from the culture at the time in which it was formulated to understand the metaphors. Otherwise, we're always going to be on the outside of it. So the Tao Te Ching tells us the Tao, which originated all under the sky, is to be considered as the mother of them all. When the mother is found, and the mother is the feminine, the unconscious, the soul, the psyche, which means soul. So when the mother is found, we know what her children should be. When one knows that he is his mother's child, which means that the ego is the child of emptiness, the ego is the child of emptiness of the unconscious, and proceeds to guard the qualities of the mother that belong to him. So they're using the word him, but they're talking about the mother. So they're talking about the feminine, and in a male, that would be the anima in terms of Jung. To the end of his life, he will be free from all peril. let him keep his mouth closed and shut up the portals, and all of his life he will be exempt from laborious exertion. That doesn't mean you don't have to work for a living. It means that if you know yourself as the unborn, you won't be the primary cause of your own suffering. So for most of our patients, illness has many, many and varied inputs. All we can really do is remove the patient as the cause of their own suffering. There are many things we can't address: EMFs in the environment. It's hard to really address the quality of food they're eating. Of course, if they're drinking 12 Diet Cokes a day and you get them to eat organic food, you're improving it. But that organic food is still subjected to EMFs and planes flying over and dumping gas and the general state of our planet, right? But what we can do is, effective treatment is not so much about altering a person's experience, it's altering their relationship to their experience, right? So there is no particular experience that is meditation. Meditation is a perspective on experience, and that perspective is no relationship. So let him keep his mouth closed and shut up the portals, and all his life he will be exempt from laborious exertion. In other words, with the mind, with the eyes closed and the portals closed, there's an introspection and that opening of the unconscious and willingness to transcend the mind, to go into the unknown, is going to open us up to a light inside that we can discover as the source of true self. If his mouth is open and he spends his breath in the promotion of his fears, all his life there will be no safety for him. There are two directions of will. Will can be expended to expend the jing in a death seizure to try to avoid fear and reassure ourselves of our ego's own immortality by accumulating money, power, and status in the world. So that could be the external application of will. But if we close the portals and shut the doors and eliminate ourselves as the source of our own suffering, then we can use the will to make that journey, like Yuan Zhi, the herb Yuan Zhi is long will. The will is the shen in the kidney. So the will So we have the herb Yuan Zhi, long will. Right? The will is the shen in the kidney. So we put will in the kidney. It's the spirit of the kidney. We can use will not just for worldly gain and accumulating face, but for transcending face. And transcending face means closing the portals and using the will to establish a conduit for shen to go into jing to contemplate ourselves as emptiness. So when you meditate, you are something contemplating yourself as nothing. And you're using your will to return to the source of self and discover the part of oneself which is unborn and undying. And if you're unborn and you're undying, there's no cause for fear to arise. And then one generates ease in the face of the unknown and discovers the self that has nothing to get over. Discovers the self that has nothing to overcome because nothing ever happened to it. You see? So it's through knowing, through having a living, authentic relationship to the dimension of my own self, which was never wounded, traumatized, or injured, and knowing that as the foundation of my own self empowers within me the capacity to recognize that within every individual who comes to me for medicine. and it's restoring a person's memory and realization of their own self as an unwounded, untraumatized, unvictimized individual who, in fact, whose mind and body is a conduit for the supreme power of the universe to manifest the spirit. It's the shifting of that identification in a patient, which is the basis of all authentic healing, and that doesn't take time, necessarily. It's going to take time for their bones to get stronger. It's going to take time to overcome the fact that they took antibiotics for 3 years, or you know, and if they have, if their pancreas isn't making insulin and they have type 1 diabetes and they're on insulin, it's good that they're on that, but that's not an impediment to the kind of realization that I'm talking about. So we have this notion of healing. Healing the physical body takes time. It's a process. But at the deepest level, when it comes to really anything we'd look toward for the psycho-emotional, for the what we call spiritual healing, the irony is that spirit doesn't need to heal because nothing happened to it. It's doing just fine. So that can be very powerful to bring that into a person's awareness that who they are right now is the perfect vehicle for going forward, that they don't need more time to get to a place where they can realize spirit, that right here, right now, they are spirit. And it's only the degree to which I'm actually living that and embodying that, am I going to transmit that, and then through resonance, it's going to awaken that force within their own selves, the force of spirit, the force of soul, the force of conscience within their own self. And as those things begin to awake, they're going to be met by resistance, which is wholly committed to maintaining the status quo. And to me, the entire path of medicine is one of knowing how to awaken the upright, authentic, righteous energies within a person, the Zheng Qi, right, the upright Qi and the authentic Qi, how to rectify and awaken and bring those forces into a person's awareness so they're not just happening unconsciously, but a person has a living, conscious relationship with to them. And then the other big part is how then do you deal with all the person's own resistance in the ego's fight to maintain the status quo, because the ego sees itself as a victim who needs more time to heal. And the person has come to be enculturated, and they've come to identify themselves with their symptoms. So the basic puzzle of treatment is that the person's coming in saying they want to be better and they want the symptom to go away, but they only know themselves as the pathology. And the self that knows itself as the pathology, that the pathology is a perfect representation of, has to die in order for them to become the self that doesn't have it. And at every level of development, there's a death seizure where the person actually has resistance and just wants to maintain the status quo and accepts a substitute gratification for wholeness. The infant's accepting a substitute gratification by sucking its thumb. At higher levels of development, sex, money, power become substitute gratifications for wholeness. And helping people understand what it is what actions, beliefs, thoughts, behavior they're attending to and acting out of that are merely substitute gratifications for their own health and the foundation of health, Jing Qi and Shen, which is who they really are, which is never not present. It's always present and always a source of power and truth and beauty to move forward from right here, right now, without any time in the picture. We need to be able to embody that and through resonance engender that within the person, but that's going to engender resistance. And when I talk about treating blocks, I'm talking about recognizing where the resistance is and how to move it. Blood stagnation, qi stagnation, damp stagnation, wind, qi deficiency, yin deficiency, arrogant liver rising, all of that is just metaphor for ignorance from a spiritual perspective. It's all just physiological metaphor, materialism, and thermodynamic physiological metaphor for lack of knowledge of self, lack of commitment to true self, lack of willingness to live up to what a person already has seen is true. So all of these are all, everything we call stagnation in Chinese medicine is just the physiological embodiment of crap on the windshield that the person has come to identify with, forgetting that they're actually the consciousness looking through the windshield as well as what's on the other side of it. In other words, what's speaking right now is the same thing that's listening. So what's speaking is the same thing that's listening, and the ego is the illusion that someone else is speaking and someone else is listening. Here we have a unfortunately poor reproduction of a chart I drew on Chinese physiology. It's in my book, Nourishing Destiny. I actually can't explain why it looks like this, because it looks hunky-dory on my computer screen. So I can only assume that for some reason, I scanned it at 600 dpi from my book. You would think that would give us a satisfactory result. So looking at this quickly, Lao Tzu says the Tao that can be spoken is not the eternal Tao. So that's not in the chart. That's down underneath. He said, but if forced to, so Lao Tzu is dying and he's on the back of his donkey and he gets to the Western Pass, which is the gate of the Queen Mother, which has the name of CV1, Golden Gate. So Golden Gate is the portal between being and non-being. So that's why insemination happens through that area and the baby comes from nothing into the material universe through that area, right? And it's for revival from drowning. Interestingly enough, as a metaphor for becoming overwhelmed by the unconscious, because the ocean is the unconscious, right? So Lao Tzu's on the donkey and he gets to the Western Pass, which means he's about to die, and the gatekeeper says, not so quick, you have to write a book giving us the accumulation of your lifetime's worth of study. So he protests and he says, well, the Tao that can be named is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. If you force me to name it, it'll create the material universe. It doesn't have a name, but if forced to give it a name, I call it Tao and the Tao is one. So if there's one, there's two. There's now the unnamed Tao and the named Tao. So if there's two, then we have heaven on the right and earth on the left, mediated by qi, and the qi is the zhongqi, and the zhongqi is the character for water, and a picture of a whirlpool and a geyser. So this character zhong means to blend, to mix. The function of the zhongqi is to put heaven and earth together so they're completely interpenetrated. So when we do qigong, I separate heaven and earth, and then I bring them together into one at the level of the heart, and then separate them. So the function of qi is to keep things separate, hold things in place, blend things, transform things, warm them. So we have this zhongqi between heaven and earth. It's a whirlpool. And whirlpools go down, they're empty in the middle, going back down to the source. But it also means a geyser, so it's also the explosion of something from nothing. The geyser exploding from emptiness, the entry into creation of infinite potential. So that's the zhongqi. In other words, transcendence and immanence. There's a whirlpool going down to the source and a simultaneous explosion. One is evolution and the other is involution. The soul in the day of our life evolves up the spine as the light ascends the spine through us, and after death comes down through the Bardo realms to involute back into an incarnation. So there's involution, evolution. I know I'm covering a lot here, but I said broad overview, right? So we have from emptiness comes the one, then there's two, heaven and earth, then there's three. And these three, the Tao Te Ching and the Taoist canon and Chuangzi say these three remain forever as one in the state of a chicken egg. So a chicken egg has a broad bottom and a narrow top. So there's heaven and earth, and then something is catalyzing. The emergence of something is being catalyzed and incubating in the interior. So what we have here is the uterus and the ovaries incubating the fetus of the material universe. That's pretty cool. And then if we come into physiology, Jing is one. So we have the unnamed Tao, we have the Tao, and we have Jing. Corresponding to earth, we have the yin, primordial yin. Corresponding to heaven, we have the primordial yang. Between the two, we have Ming Men, gate of destiny. So instead of Chung Chi, we have Ming Men infusing Jing with Shen. The Shen rises out of the Jing as the sun comes out of the ocean. And the gate of destiny is infusing yin with yang, and Jing with Shen. And everything on the left side of that line is the Jing, Qi, and Shen, the three treasures, early heaven. It's what you get between the moment of conception and the moment of first breath. Everything to the right of the line is acquired, meaning from the first breath on, you're accumulating it. From the first breath on. So Ming Men infuses yin with yang, Jing with Shen, and early heaven, everything between conception and first breath, with later heaven. And later heaven comes to us through what? The seven portals in the head, the sensory orifices. So later heaven comes to me through breathing, eating, drinking, hearing, seeing, smelling. That's how we accumulate life experience. Just as the stomach, which processes later heaven, so if you eat a donut and you eat an apple and you eat some organic kale and you eat a Heath bar, the stomach has to break it all down into one. And the stomach at the level of stomach eight, head tied, is thought. So thought is the spirit of the stomach, the E is the spirit of earth, and it's thought, which is the digestive aspect of mind, which helps us break down our life experience as gleaned through the sensory portals, right? So early heaven, our genetic complement of Jing, Ji, Shen, the hand we're dealt at conception, our constitutional endowment, is infused with our acquired chi, the food we eat, the water we drink, the air we breathe, our life experience, and not just our life experience, but what we happen to think about it, the position we take in relationship to our life experience, significantly determines what we're feeding into Ming Men. The conclusions we draw, the ego, is a genetic mechanism that emerges from the structure and function of the human nervous system as a filter that whose function it is to locate us in time and space by drawing a conclusion that everything that happens to us in our life means something about us. It's called being self-absorbed. I wonder what that little bird just flew by. I wonder what it means about me. Do you see? About me. So the ego is this force that personalizes everything. And this filter is conditioned constitutionally. The five element system is a system in Chinese medicine that lets us look at this filter and know how from the moment of conception, a person is prone to interpret their experience and embody it. But there are many other systems. The Enneagram is a system. Myers-Briggs is a system. Psychoanalysis has many systems. Entry-exit points are a way of looking at people and being able to recognize constitutional patterns or acquired patterns that condition how the person's relating to life. So all of these different systems in Chinese medicine are typing systems that tell us how the nature of this filter and how it's working. And there are cultural there's not just genetic conditioning on this filter, there's cultural conditioning, there's male conditioning, there's female conditioning, there's Jewish conditioning and Christian conditioning and Protestant conditioning and Catholic conditioning and Seventh-day Adventist conditioning and Tibetan Buddhist conditioning and Chan conditioning and Theravada conditioning and Mahayana conditioning, right? If you ask a Mahayana Buddhist who the real Buddhists are, they'll say, well, the Mahayana Buddhists, the Theravadists didn't really quite get it right. I've had that conversation. It makes me laugh. I was once teaching in Manhattan, and a guy banged a table and he yelled at me. He didn't yell. He asserted. He said, I'm a Buddhist. And I said, who's a Buddhist? I thought it was so ironic. People can talk a good game, but if you're listening, it gets either sad or very funny quickly. So, I'll still know. Are you going to keep talking to your cat?
Yes.
Well, your cat's far more abusive than I've been. She has a black eye. She walked up to introduce herself to me yesterday, and I said, "Stomach one?" And she said, "No, my cat attacked me." She's going to stop talking to me, but she's going to go home and feed the cat.
Yes, I will.
There's irony and humor everywhere. All of this we can refer to as the portal of the heart. The heart portal. The heart portal is the one, and then the sensory orifices are the many. So the sensory orifices are the flower of the heart orifice. The heart orifice is one spirit in the universe, one heart, a center, and an opening. Now, not anatomically in terms of Western anatomy, but metaphorically in terms of Chinese physiology. We talk about the heart orifice and the sensory orifices. They are the flowers, the openings into the exterior world. And ideally, if this filter is clear, if this is a window, a clear mirror providing an adequate reflection, then there's no difference between the inside and the outside. And reality is perceived. But that's never true for anybody. Why? Because the individual is culture. And culture always has its assumptions, its blind spots. No human being is free from culture. If you raise an individual without culture, you produce autism, right? So there's always culture. The individual is culture. And what's so important about that is it puts all the power in our hands, because as an individual human being, when any of us make a choice for something higher, going against all the conditioning inside, but we assert a deeper truth in our soul and in our heart, against the tide of culture, it's not just us changing, we're transforming culture. So we're not separate in any way. So the entry-exit points at a simple mechanical level give us the flow of chi through the 24-hour cycle, and we know every organ has a 2-hour high and a 2-hour low point. So there's nothing esoteric about this. If here I've started with the heart as one. So you can start with the heart or the lungs. And there are good reasons for either. I like starting with the heart because heart one is the point at which the creative impulse explodes out of emptiness. So you have this in the article I gave you for the class. There's an entry, there's a whole article on this. So most of what I'm telling you is in there, so you don't really have to take notes too much. Okay, so we go heart, small intestine, bladder, kidney, pericardium, three-heater, gallbladder, liver, lung, colon, stomach, spleen, and back to heart. And 11 to 1, 1 to 3, everyone understands, 2 hours high, 2 hours low. A very important point, is that the entry point for every meridian is not the first point. For instance, on large intestine, it's colon 4. And the exit point on every meridian is not the last point. On kidney, it's kidney 22. On triple heater, it's triple heater 22, for example. So you can't just assume that it's the first and last point. So on the chart I gave you, the ones with the asterisks, for instance, the exit point on gallbladder is gallbladder 41. So the ones with the asterisks represent entry and exit points that are not the first and last point on the channel. The way to detect entry-exit blocks and imbalances are on the pulse. Now, in time, you can learn to do it just by looking at someone and just talking to them, and it's clear. But the mechanical way to do it and the way to learn through experience is to just be shown them on the pulse. The important thing about entry-exit blocks are because the channels are cyclical, in other words, you can think of all the channels as just one circle. And the entry-exit block is telling you where the chi stopped flowing, somewhere in the circle. You understand? What's so cool about treating these and rectifying the blocks is that you can have symptomatology at a great distance to the block and then treat it, and because the treatment itself is rectifying the flow of qi through the entire system, you can have very broad and very deep changes in symptomatology and in the patient's own awareness. So this is an example here of strong qi and stomach spleen, and say lung, colon, stomach, spleen. So we know the qi goes from lung to large intestine to stomach to spleen, right? And what we see here is these two pulses are strong, but the small intestine, heart, bladder, and kidney are very weak. So qi again would go lung, large intestine, stomach, spleen, heart, small intestine, bladder, kidney. Everyone in school knows this, right? This is just the order of qi flow. This pulse pattern shows a relative excess in metal and earth, and then a great deficiency in fire, and a great deficiency in water. A person can have sciatica going from their right knee down to bladder 67, and you can do spleen 21, heart 1, and that's going to open up the transmission of this relative excess into heart, which is going to flow then into small intestine, which is going to flow then into bladder and kidney. And it's, even though you're treating here, it's going to rectify the problem that's seen energetically downstream. Do you understand? This is very, very powerful. And why it needs to be clear in the beginning of treatment, because you can do all kinds of other treatments, and they might provide momentarily relief, but if this block isn't cleared, it's just going to keep self-perpetuating. So then I've given an example here after doing spleen 21, heart 1, how now there's correspondingly less qi in earth and metal, and then correspondingly more qi in fire and water. Do you understand? So there are six entry-exit blocks that are of interest to us. Now, there is an entry-exit block between gallbladder and liver, and heart and small intestine, and lung and colon, right? Because lung flows into colon, so there's a point where the qi leaves lung to go into colon. We're not going to be concerned with those. It's not that they're irrelevant, it's just that when you have disharmonies in the channels between meridians and organs of the same element, it's much more effective to treat them with source and low points. We're only going to be interested in the entry-exit blocks between two different elements. And feel free to ask questions at any time. I just tend to go till the last person leaves and then I turn out the lights. So if you have a question, just cover a lot of information and go quickly. Entry-exit blocks can be constitutional or acquired. A person can just be constitutionally prone to a block between two organs. And they're going to replicate that over and over and over throughout their lifetime. And if you treat them for, the longest I've treated anybody is 30 years. And this block is just going to come up now and then because it's just kind of like a rut they settle into constitutionally. And other people will have the same entry-exit block, but it happens because they had a surgery that put a scar across the channel, or they were shot, or they fell off their bike, or they were hit really hard in a martial arts match, or they hurt themselves skiing. They had some trauma that injured the channel in that way that engendered it. In that case, you clear the block a couple times and it doesn't tend to come back. So they can be acquired or constitutional. They need to be cleared at the beginning of treatment and then learn to be recognized throughout treatment. If a patient's been, you know, I've been treating them a while and they're coming in 4 or 6 times a year, or they just call me and I haven't seen them in 5 years, but they say, I had a car crash, I hurt myself skiing, I got injured, you know, doing this or that. This is one of the primary things I want to look for and correct in the treatment the first time they come in before I get to any of the deeper things that I might be seeing. Because I want to make sure the flow of chi is in place through all 12 meridians. Okay, they treat a basis of any symptom at all can be treated, and just any symptom can be a compensation for an entry-exit block, and you can treat an entry-exit block and have anything. I had one woman come in for lower back pain, and she had an entry-exit block between, I think it was kidney and pericardium. So I drained Jiechi, I corrected the entry-exit block, I did GV3, and she came back. She had to miss the next week. She came back 2 weeks later. I said, how are you? She said, I'm pregnant. I said, congratulations. She said, you don't understand. I was beaten up very badly when I was a teenager, and I was told I could never get pregnant, and I've had unprotected sex for 24 years. And she had always wanted a kid. And just through opening up the channel, just through restoring functional integrity to the channel system, something was changed that allowed her to get pregnant, right? So we can understand that. She thought it, and it's kind of miraculous, but it's not unknown to understand why Chinese medicine would do something like that. Okay, there are two categories of entry-exit blocks. We have three on the chest that take qi through the heart. Those are the yin organs. And then we have three on the head that take qi, blood, yang through the mind. Those are the yang organs. So on the chest, we have liver 14 to lung 1. We have kidney 22 to pericardium 1. We have spleen 21 to heart 1. This is all in the article I gave you. What's interesting about these are that they're all bringing qi through the heart. So if you think liver 14 to lung 1, kidney 22, pericardium 1, and spleen 22 to heart 1, they're all bringing it right through the heart, right? So the heart has to do with feeling, intuition, emotion, light, shen. Shen can be shen largesse, which is the macrocosmic shen, the one spirit, the one consciousness in the universe. And shen can be shen smallesse, which is the personal ego, the mind of the individual. Spiritual experience is the breakdown of the distinction between shen smallesse and shen largesse. So shen smallesse says, oh my God, I had no idea. I'm so big, I'm not who I thought I was. I'm not in here. There is no in here. There is no out there. It's all one, right? So that distinction breaks down. And then we have the entry-exit blocks. Keep hitting the wrong thing. Entry-exit blocks on the head, which are all bringing qi through the mind. Yang, qi and yang. The heart is more about blood and yin, emotions, and the blood is the carrier of Shen. And on by the sensory orifices on the head, the yang organs are all about the mind. So when we talk about the heart orifice and the sensory portals, the yin entry exit blocks on the yin organs are dealing more with the heart orifice, and the entry exit blocks on the head for the yang organs are doing more with the sensory portals. So what I'm going to do for the rest of the class is we're going to try to get through all six entry exit blocks and talk about the nature of them, because we start the circulation of qi in most traditions with the lung. We're going to begin with liver and lung. So there's a few things very interesting about this. If you look at, here's the entry-exit block between spleen and heart, and here's the entry-exit block between pericardium and kidney, and here's triple heater to gallbladder, here's small intestine to bladder, right? Here's colon to stomach, and then there's liver to lung. So it's about 4 to 5 times as long as any of the other entry-exit blocks. We all know that the channels have an interior aspect. So what we consider the 12 channels are an external aspect, but there's an internal channel, and that internal channel is going between the entry-exit blocks, right? So there's actually a channel, an interior channel between liver to lung. And if you look at the internal route of that channel, it has to make it through the diaphragm. Right? It's the only entry-exit block that has to make it through the diaphragm. Everything below the diaphragm is the unconscious. Everything above the diaphragm is conscious. So above the diaphragm, you have the heart, the lungs, and the sensory orifices corresponding to the heart is the sun, the lungs are the moon, the sensory orifices, the 7 holes in the head are the stars. So everything above the diaphragm is conscious, everything below the diaphragm is unconscious. I just wrote a series of 2 articles in the journal Meridians on psychoanalysis in Chinese medicine. And the first part of it looks, the first article is looking at the diaphragm as an organ of repression and talking about the what acupuncture points and what Chinese herbal formulas open the diaphragm and their role in releasing repression and suppression. Okay, so you can get all those. They're all up on at nourishingdestiny.com for free. Also, if you know academia.edu, almost all the articles I've ever written I put up there for free too. You just create a free membership at academia.edu, and then you can search 500,000 articles in every subject. So if you just go join and type my name, and you'll get most of the articles I've ever published. Okay. The relationship between liver to lung is the relationship between aspiration and inspiration. The liver begins at kidney 1, which is the wood within the water, goes to liver 1, which is the wood in the wood, and ends at GV20. So if we think of the liver meridian, the greatest depth is kidney 1 and the greatest height is GV20. And the liver governs aspiration. So when we think of liver 14, when we think of acupuncture point liver 14, that's the top of a tree. And the rise of the yang, the liver rises clear yang, right? The liver rises clear yang. So that clear yang is a physiological metaphor for empowers the accurate perception of things as they are. Face everything, avoid nothing. Helps us perceive reality. So liver 14 governs aspiration. It's called gate of hope. It's qi men is just looking toward the future. Looking toward the future incarnation. Remember, if lung is the first in the circulation of qi, then liver is the last. This is the passing of the soul, the Hun spirit, through GV20 at death. Right? So another, there's a name camphor gate, and caskets are made out of camphor. camphor wood. So so the rising of the clear yang is aspiration. To aspire towards something is to marshal qi and marshal yang within ourselves and to feel compelled toward it. But lung is that shiny object in the sky, heaven outside of us, that we feel inspired by. So the relationship between liver 14 and lung 1 is the reunion where our internal aspiration towards something better meets the object that it's striving toward. And when there's a block between the two, that occurs because the diaphragm becomes tense. And when the diaphragm becomes tense, all 12 channels suffer because all the paired channels go through the diaphragm. Right? So Tai Yang, Xiao Yin, Zhui Yin, Yang Ming, Yuan Tai Yin, right? All of these, they all go through the diaphragm, and if the diaphragm is constricted, then all 12 channels are choking. And the diaphragm becomes constricted because we get hung up on the past. We know ourselves as a creation of the past. And if you look at liver 13 and liver 14, the name of liver 13 is Gate of Law. Gate of, yes, sir.
Is this why people smoke?
People smoke because the tobacco industry spends $4 billion a year. I think that people smoke for varied reasons, but in general I would say that people who smoke have lost their connection to emptiness inside of themselves, and the smoking is a substitute gratification for wholeness, whereby they feel alone inside, and smoking they can fill the emptiness up and get reaffirmed that they are somebody and that they actually exist to ironically avoid the death seizure.
I mean repression, suppression.
Yeah, yeah. One of the main causes of diaphragm stagnation is when a person is in an intimate relationship that breaks up, the liver is angry because it feels disappointed because the other person is not, the only reason you're leaving is the other person hasn't lived up to what they said they were gonna do. And if you're the one being left, then the person leaving you isn't living up to what you thought they said they were gonna do. So the liver experiences anger, but is also pushing you to see things as they are and to create a better future. So the liver's creating a rising energy below the diaphragm. But the heart is the source of tender feelings. You didn't get together with the person because they were an idiot. You love them, the heart still loves, there's still that connection to the person you fell in love with. But in the light of the fact of leaving a person or being left, the tender feelings can't be allowed anymore. So there's a suppression and you get a conflict between the liver rising and the heart being suppressed, which creates a tension in the diaphragm. And that is what Banzha Sheshantong treats. So that is all in the article that I talked about. We don't have time to go through all the words, but Banzha Sheshantong, which Ted Kapchuk translates as broken heart soup. There's Banzha Hoputong, which also releases the diaphragm. There's Nushensan, woman's spirit powder. So for women going through menopause who can't face into, so in culture, the value of a woman is defined by sex and service. And so when a woman is going through this change and she can't face into who she's going to be, in the light of these physical changes, there's a loss of ego identification, and that can create dizziness and tension in the diaphragm. And Nushensan opens up that tension in the diaphragm, releases the diaphragm so the yang can keep coming and the transition can be made more gracefully. And it's filled with aromatic herbs to cut through the illusion of self-identification and ignorance. So Nushensan, woman's spirit powder. Very, very powerful. But you give that to a woman with only a certain kind. You can't just go prescribe that to everyone who's having a problem with self-identification. They need the right pulse.
So suppose you have someone with pain on, say, liver 14, and they lost aspiration or...
Mm-hmm.
So you would start with lung one, or you start with...
Haven't gotten there yet.
Okay.
On the way.
All right.
No, we're on the way. So typical symptoms that you know, this is all pretty intuitive. So with stagnation at liver 14, stagnation in the diaphragm, an entry-exit block between liver and lung, the lung is not being fed, the liver is tight, the diaphragm is tense, the liver can't rise the yang, there's lack of aspiration, and therefore lack of striving, and therefore lack of inspiration. If the person has strong yang and they're still pushing, you're going to get those excess symptoms of tension and pressure. And if the person has weak yang and there's not enough yang to keep pushing, then you're going to get weak sighing, disappointment, resignation. So we have acid reflux, distension under the ribs, sighing, frustration, rage, lack of inspiration, plum pit chi, pressure in the chest, shallow breathing. And typical symptoms. All of this, liver 14 to lung 1, it can disappear in a moment. Okay? So I just want you to think aspiration and inspiration. When the person is... The diaphragm is the internal embodiment of wall. W-A-L-L. Wall. The diaphragm is the wall between the unconscious and the conscious. Okay? Everything that's descending has to go through it. Everything that's ascending has to get through it. So when it's very, very tense, you have a lack of communication between the heart and kidney. The person tends to see themselves as a victim of circumstance. The Shen can't penetrate the Jing. They're not in touch with their purpose, with their life curriculum. You would say, you can see that this is very powerful. The needle technique, there are several needle techniques. This is based on your intuition, based on pulse. So I can't tell you how to do it. One of the needle techniques is to go to liver 14, stimulate it, get qi, take it out. Go to lung 1, stimulate it, get qi, take it out. And then, you know, liver 14, decide, lung 1, then liver 14, then lung 1. And then you go check, and the pulse should have equilibrated with less stagnant qi on the liver and more qi present in the lung, since the lung had been deficient. When you're feeling this on the pulse, the channel that needs the exit point is going to be relatively strong and pounding, and the channel that needs the entry point is going to be relatively feeble, deep, and weak. And then after you do the entry-exit block, the one that was overflowing and pounding, hitting with strength, should have chilled, and the one that could barely be felt should have come up, so the two should now feel closer together on the pulse. Another thing I like to do is put a needle in liver 14, get qi gently in the direction toward lung 1, then needle lung 1, get qi, and leave all four needles in for a while. I design a lot of my treatments around entry-exit points. So in any given, I see about 20 patients 3 days a week, and 8 patients a day, I'm including some entry-exit block in their treatment. Okay, this didn't come out well either. I don't know why, I'm kind of new at this PowerPoint thing. Looks perfectly good to me on my computer screen. All this is really showing here is here's the diaphragm. This is a fairly muscular gentleman. There's liver 13, there's liver 14. We see the diaphragm going like this. And there's more information there, but I wasn't going to talk about it anyway. And a lot of it's in those two articles on psychoanalysis and the diaphragm. I'm going to have to figure this out. You would think scanning at 600 dpi would be enough. Let's talk about pericardium, kidney. How am I doing for time? Does anyone know?
Yeah, 7 minutes before break.
7 minutes. It's always kind of like this thing where I travel, 2,000-3,000 miles, and then they give me a few hours to speak. I guess that's how it has to be. Okay, so pericardium, heart protector kidney. Bulang is the name of pericardium. Bu means to step, so it means to put one foot after another. And this is an interesting character. The inner part, see, if you take that away, the inner part's the name of an ancient city in China. But when you put this over it, it means both either veranda or a corridor. So the core, this is pretty cool. So if you think of the kidney channel, here's kidney 22, called walking on the veranda, or walking to the corridor, okay? The qi goes from kidney 22 to pericardium 1. And then you have 5 points. Going up to kidney 27 that aren't on the channel, because the qi has gone this way. And these points all have to do with the burial ground, the journey into the unconscious and the burial ground of the soul. Right? So you have kidney 24, Lingzhu, spirit burial ground, soul burial ground. So you have spirit seal. And the name of these points leading up to it are like through the valley, dark gate, walking to the corridor. This is the corridor. This is actually, these point names are the names of statues and places on the spirit road leading to the emperor's mausoleum in China. So just before the emperor's mausoleum, you see these five like 20-foot tall officials on either side facing each other. And these are these 5 points. And it has to do with the journey of the soul into the unconscious, into the realms where the entheogens take us. Into the soul realm, the sixth chakra, where everything, all material reality is just deconstructed as archetype. Am I getting too tangential? Did that resonate at all? Okay. So, okay. So the qi is going from kidney 22 to pericardium 1, right? This way, kidney 22, pericardium 1. And this is the relationship between water and fire, and it's the relationship between consciousness and unconsciousness. Water is the unconscious, the depth, the feminine, the mother, the intuition, all that as modern people, whether you're a man or woman, is suppressed and turned from by culture and by conditioning. And then into the realm of the pericardium, into the realm of the heart, we're into the realm of consciousness, and into the realm of the pericardium is that gatekeeper. Who am I going to let close? What and who am I going to let into my awareness? And what we're talking about in this entry-exit combination is the relationship between fear and intimacy. And everybody thinks they want intimacy, but authentic intimacy implies the death of the ego. Authentic intimacy is the depth of the ego, and most people can only bear it now and then, maybe during like simultaneous orgasm with their partner for a couple of seconds, after which they feel instantly self-conscious and like maybe they had let go too much. Right? So it's like, everybody think, like the greatest promise that culture holds out is a substitute gratification. The highest thing you can aspire to in culture throughout the world, modern culture throughout the world, is simultaneous orgasm with your partner. If you don't believe me, just look at all the TVs and movies and newspaper and all the ads at bus stop. That's all what they're pointing to. And it's all a substitute gratification for oneness. And what Tibetan Buddhism in the Tibetan Book of the Dead tells us is that when we die, we become one with a light that is unbearably beautiful, unbearably beautiful to every relative part of the self we're not ready to let go of. And then the journey down through the bardos is that journey of through ignorance, through choice, stepping back from that which was unbearably beautiful. When I was 14, I read the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and I didn't understand anything in it. But I did get, and I felt greatly relieved, that when you die, just go toward the white light and you're good. And I thought, okay, anyone can do that. And then what I've come to realize is you're not going to go to it. You're not going to go toward the white light then any more than you're doing it now, and for the exact same reasons. We're already dead. There's already a dimension of ourselves which is unborn. We're already there. We're already always living in our soul in the condition of needing to let go of everything in this world in order to be free. We're already always there. It's just an illusion that we have time and that it's going to happen at some other time, but it's never any other time but right now. This entry-exit point is really speaking to this. People feel that they've been raped, they've been abused, God knows, terrible things happen to people, that they've been hard done by, and people are convinced they need time to heal, and that as they conceive healing, it's always something that's going to happen in the future, but never right now. Okay? Healing at the level I'm talking about doesn't take time. It takes time for a bone to heal. It takes time for the body, but at the level I'm talking about, it doesn't take time. And when I use the word ego, we can be very simple. I'm referring to part of ourselves that wants it to take time. The postmodern ego loves spirituality and healing. The postmodern ego loves being a seeker. That's why the Kripalu catalog is thicker than my red book. So the postmodern ego loves being a seeker, but it has no intention of ever finding. Ever. And the ego loves the idea of healing. Can you do that point between my eyes again? That was fantastic. So most of our patients, their ideal would be to be immersed in a bath of the exact temperature that they found amenable, with eunuchs waving palm fronds, or people of their chosen genetic gender preference raising palm fronds, and they'd have an IV of Demerol and morphine, a little Bujang in one arm, a little Shaoyuan in the other, and they'd have a little bell they could ring. And they ring the bell, and you go, "What's wrong?" "I'm feeling something." Having an experience. So they just, "Could you turn up the Bujang? I'm feeling a little relaxed." And they go, "No, a little more Shaoyuan." "Okay, that's good. I'll ring in a minute if I need anything." So we have water, fear overwhelming the heart, over controlling the heart, putting out the heart's fire. We have the heart potentially also trying to suppress the water because it's suppressing the unconscious. And everybody thinks they've been wounded and hard done by, they need more time to heal, and they need to be able to learn to trust again. And when they can trust again, they'll be healthy. But in order to trust, you have to do everything exactly like they tell you. Could you all move back a little? I'm feeling a little close. Here, maybe this is better. See, again, I did this. They're laughing at me. Here I'm bearing my soul, and they're laughing at me. I feel hurt, wounded. Do you know that when I was a teenager, no, I'm serious, my parents didn't understand me. It was awful. So the thing is, if you want to rectify the heart, you don't learn to trust again, you learn to become trustworthy. That's what rectifies the heart. That's what this entry-exit block is about. And everybody thinks it's about learning to trust again and feeling safe. Feeling safe doesn't mean you're safe. What would that even mean in this? What would being safe even mean in this universe? Have you noticed it's like there's a planet and then a meteor goes boom? So God, get this, like it took a billion years, it took like 14 billion years for life to arrive on the planet. And God probably like turns his back to get a cup of coffee and a meteor hits. And it took 14 billion years to produce large lizards. Basically. And in a second and a half, they all go extinct. Do you think God's attitude was like, oy vey, I turned for 1 second, 14... I've got to go to Kripalu to get some R&R. What was the number of my five-element acupuncturist? I need a little rest, a little relaxation. I need love. I need compassion and understanding. I think God's attitude was, we're going with the mammals. So consciousness is just this relentless force forward. It doesn't care what the vehicle is. So I'm just told that we're on break. So when you come back from break, we'll finish this, and then we'll try to get through as many of the others as we can. Thank you.
Just to clarify, you said to rectify your heart is that you become
trustworthy. It's not about
necessarily trusting.
It's not about learning to. The way you learn to trust others is through trusting your own self. Nobody is ever going to trust anyone else to any more of a degree than they trust their own self.